Today is Thursday. It's October 31 when the sun goes to rest. It's the night of Halloween when fun is at its best. Come on, everybody.
Moving along.
It's October 31st, 2019. It's 11:13 in the morning. Hi, I'm John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio on Thursdays. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3.
I'm Steve Bertrand. I host the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Heather Sharon of The Daily Line.
I'm Eric Zorn, the spooky columnist.
With kitty ears on, what are you doing?
This is my costume. Going trick-or-treating right from here.
No, you can't. It's too snowy and cold and wet. We'll get to that in a minute. First, let's talk about the CTU and the CPS. We've talked about this the last couple of podcasts, and we are at a, I think, critical moment even as we speak. I wrote, when is a settled strike not a settled strike? When the two sides don't agree on getting back the days they were on strike. Chicago teachers and the public schools have come to an agreement after missing their 11th day of classes. So do they get to add those missed days back on the calendar so the teachers get paid for them? Absolutely not, said the mayor. So now they're absolutely not back in the classroom. I wrote that like an hour ago. Since then, I think they have agreed that they will find a middle ground.
Well, the mayor said this morning that she was open to compromise to adding some days, that she said the union was offering them her, you know, a mandate of all days or nothing, and she said that's a non-starter, opening up the idea that there could be some days. And then Jesse Sharkey spoke maybe 20 minutes later saying, well, yeah, we can't get all the days back, but we'd like to get some back.
Made me wonder how they got anything done at all, because as I understand
it. In other words, this will be resolved by before this podcast drops this afternoon.
Good. But I mean, Lightfoot was there saying it never came up. And Sharkey insinuated that it was always there. Of course, we're going to get the days back, or at least some of them. All of us are parents, right? You just say, what, 10? Okay, it's 5. You want 0, you want 10, it's 5.
Well, but it's part of the deal, right? I think that's her point.
Right.
I've never seen a contract negotiation that ends without that resolved as part of the negotiation. So it should have been. And so that's when she said that he had promised that it wouldn't be an issue. And they went forward with the deal. You don't approve the deal until it's all resolved.
Now, of course, you're right. This is going to be resolved by the time this podcast drops. But it does seem to me that there are a certain number of days of instruction that are required every year in Illinois. And I think the schools are going to have to either cut into a break or going to take
a little longer.
Pulaski Day or something like that. And
no.
They're going to have to teach on those days, not Pulaski Day.
Not Pulaski Day.
Okay, sorry.
Well, this is an interesting thing that came up at the mayor's news conference this morning. I asked her, I said, well, the Illinois School Board has told reporters that that Chicago's kids are going to have to make up 3 days to meet the minimum 100-day requirement. Or the 180-day requirement. She said, that's not my understanding. You've been misinformed. It's not the first time that I've been told I was misinformed by a mayor.
Well, I thought everybody knew it was 180.
I think Heather was probably right, and Mayor Lightfoot's going to come and apologize to you for that. But let's say that Heather is right, and I think she is, that they have to do 3 days. They have to add 3 days, find somewhere to add those 3 days, and the teachers have to teach those 3 days. I would argue they should be paid for those days.
Sure.
They teach.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
If we're taking 7 days off the previous calendar, or whatever,
everyone agrees.
Then you didn't work those days. You went on strike.
But that's a week and a half of rep. Think about that. So you struck for more money and more everything and extra help in the classroom, but now you've lost a week and a half pay if you don't get paid for 7 days. If you don't work 7 days, I understand how compelling that is to the teachers, but I think that's the price you pay.
If you're going to stand up for this, there comes with sacrifice. You made the sacrifice. You don't get to be made. Well, sometimes you do, but you're not guaranteed the right to be made whole after you come to a contract agreement.
The American Federation of Teachers says that in something like 70% of these strikes, teachers are ultimately made whole. But I take your point. I mean, they took the chance. They took the strike. They're going to be paid for the days that they actually work.
Well, I think it's even more complicated than that, because the deal only was ratified by the House of Delegates by about 100 votes, which is not a huge margin. And there, as I walked over to the WGN studios through the protest, there were many people holding signs saying, don't take this deal. So there is no groundswell of huge support for this agreement, which in some ways raises the cap size, the class sizes, but triggers enforcement mechanisms. So this deal, you know, it is not being sort of wholeheartedly embraced by the teachers. And if you say also you're going to lose a week of pay, you know, that I think makes it more difficult to get it ratified.
I have another question, though, for the table, and that is, it's a 5-year deal, as I understand
it.
And the teachers were really adamant about it being a 3-year deal, and I think we know the reason. They wanted to be a 3-year deal so they could come back at this issue in the heat of a mayoral election. Apparently, Lightfoot won on the 5-year deal. Is that
that's
five
correct.
Years, 16%.
Yeah, that's correct.
I have some of the details of the agreement in front of me. I didn't realize, and maybe I'll find it here, Heather. I didn't notice it when I went through it, that the class size increases, but they're getting caps in writing. Is that it?
They can essentially grieve those class size increases. Now they basically can file a complaint, but there's no requirement that any action be taken.
What's the largest class size can be then?
I think it's 38 in high school.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
I wonder if the teachers will high-five each other when they realize that's what's before them. Maybe that's better than 39, but I don't think there are many people, we talked about this last week too, who have 39 students in their classroom. Maybe that's why they were able to agree to that, huh? Because it's kind of a moot point?
It would certainly depend on the class too, wouldn't it? I mean, there's certain classes that require a lot of hands-on instruction, like a mathematics class, I imagine. You would need to do a lot of one-on-one teaching. There's probably other classes, maybe music classes. If you've got a choir class with 38 people in it, that's not that big.
Well, so who won on this? Do you have a quick snap answer to that? Who came out ahead on this?
I mean, it's hard to say who's won or lost with, kids still out of school. But I think that one of the questions I have going forward is, does this sour relations for the rest of Lori Lightfoot's term between the mayor's office and the CTU? And we saw that have deep ramifications for Rahm Emanuel. And if this strike ends sort of with a whimper and bad feelings, I think that that is going to be an issue.
I think this is going to linger. That's sure the feeling I get. And I think it's going to linger not only between the two of them, but I think the Chicago area got a bad taste in their mouth about Chicago teachers. I'll tell you what, we had 5 teachers in our studio yesterday just telling us what their reality is, what life is like, what their pay is like, all of that. And the text line was not kind to them.
John, I heard that show, and they were describing arriving at school at 7 in the morning and not leaving it sometimes until 6 at night. And people talk about teachers, they lead this soft, cushy life. I don't think that's true, and I think that a lot of them are really dedicated professionals. This is not to judge the specifics of their contract demands, but the teachers I know and the teachers that were on your show, these are dedicated people.
I loved every one of them. But, Eric, I don't think people – okay, maybe people are tired of the soft, cushy life that teachers' lives are described as. I don't describe it as that. My point has been, did you work 7 to 6 one day recently? How many people listening to that conversation are busting their ass 7 days a week as it is? And they ain't getting 16% over 5 years.
Well, and one of the problems that I saw in their approach was they did seem to keep move the goalposts, right? They kept saying that was going to be about rent control, and then it was the elected school board became an issue in the last week of the negotiations. And I think that left people feeling a little bit reeling over their position. Like, wait a minute, this is not. At some point, we're getting way beyond.
Well, it's weird to have a strike that starts with an agreement on salary. I mean, this was always a very unusual thing to strike over.
Well, one last thing about that, and I think that's another PR campaign part of this that the teachers lost. I think people have in their mind now: Chicago public school teachers make about $94,000, or will pretty soon. And when one of the teachers was sitting here, she said, okay, I have 100 teachers at my school. One person makes over 6 figures. They were all making $60,000, $70,000. Nice living, but not great. Here's what they're going to get. At least one full-time nurse and social worker in every school by 2023. $500,000 annually spent to recruit and train clinicians such as nurses. They got to get those people in the pipeline, psychologists. They're going to reduce the ratio of students to various clinical positions. They're going to increase the staffing levels of English language program coordinators, and it goes on. More money spent on sports. Let's talk about Donald Trump coming to town in the week that he is having. This is happening, isn't it? The first formal vote on this, it went 232 to 196. It was a two-part vote, and in each case, all of the Republicans voted against it, and all but 2 of the Democrats voted for it. This is not a required vote that they had today, Thursday, in the House. Republicans have complained that this has all been behind closed doors. They've been locked out of the process. There was no formal vote on the proceedings. Kevin McCarthy said on the floor today that the president's actions were legitimate.
In all the hearings, there's nothing compelling, nothing overwhelming.
But the Democrats kind of called their bluffs,
and
they're going to go forward.
Is Kevin McCarthy saying that it's legitimate for the president of the United States to withhold military aid to an ally because he wants them to conduct a politically motivated investigation?
Well, that's not
that's what they're saying.
That's not how he would put it.
That's not
yes.
the question they're answering. The question they're answering is about this impeachment, the process question.
Well, and
that's the way they can fight it without having to refute the allegation.
But I think he was referring to the president's phone call as a legitimate action, that it's okay for
that's
the president.
That's what I was thinking, too. This process argument is complete nonsense. There were Republicans in all of these hearings. The Republicans' counsel is able to question all of the witnesses. Most of these, in fact, I think all of the transcripts of these House hearings are going to be made public soon. They're going to have public hearings soon. We are in the grand jury phase of
yes.
the impeachment proceeding.
Yes.
This is totally standard. There's nothing unusual about it. It's all allowed for in the Constitution. It's all allowed for in House rules. The Republicans are working the refs, and it's pretty shameful, especially what they did to the guy who testified this
Vindman.
Week. Vindman. Yeah, Vindman, who was born in Croatia and came over here when
Ukraine.
He was born in Ukraine,
yeah.
Okay.
Came here when he was three.
He came here when he was three. My father
How do you know he's not a spy?
Well, how do you know he was not a spy?
He was awarded the Purple Heart.
What's your next question, Senator McCarthy?
I'm telling you.
Here we have a U.S. national security official who is advising Ukraine while working inside the White House, apparently against the president's interest, and usually they spoke in English.
I find that astounding, and some people might call that espionage.
I didn't invent that.
My father came over from Germany when he was three, and he's a perfectly fine and great American, and so is this guy. And I don't. When you're 3 years old, you're not like you're attaching.
Did you guys read that he and his twin brother, who's also an NSC ethics lawyer, were profiled in the Ken Burns documentary on the Statue of Liberty about how it served as a beacon for refugees, and he's interviewed as a 3 year old with his dad.
No, really?
Yes.
I mean, he is the American dream, right?
Correct.
He is coming to this country as an immigrant and making a great life.
And their efforts to tar him were just disgraceful.
Okay,
just
but let's move past that. So it was that there was a couple of people who testified this week.
And then you have another guy, Morrison, who was a Russia expert. I don't know if he was NSC.
He was on the NSC.
And
he resigned yesterday.
He quit yesterday so he
yeah.
could testify today.
Yeah.
And now Bolton is being, I guess they're going to have to subpoena him.
We'll see. His subordinate is fighting it in court, so we'll see how that goes.
But is that...
There's a hearing, I think, today on that.
I wonder if he's really fighting it or if he just is...
If he wants cover?
If he wants cover. To
right.
Did you know? Notice that while Nancy Pelosi was overseeing the votes today, she's standing next to, they have on an easel, a great big bright American flag. It's a great big American flag. I thought the draping was stupid. I thought it was sanctimonious.
Did she embrace it? Did she grab and give a big hug?
they can't help themselves.
I can't remember.
Trump did.
Sure he did.
I think someone did. She came out and said this is all about, defending democracy
get it. For God's sakes, do you need the flag?
Here's another question for the table. Do you think that this vote today is going to be used? Certainly the Republicans are going to try to use it against the Democrats, but the Democrats are going to be able to use it against Republican incumbents as well, right? To say, you're a congressman, especially if Trump is impeached,
right.
And maybe if he's even removed, you can say, you're a congressman voted to protect this sleazebag we have in the White House.
Yeah, but it's easier for the minority to accuse the majority of making it political. If they won, this is a partisan effort.
I wonder if you were on the losing side of that anyway, Eric, if it would matter to the people that voted for those members of Congress or the president. I mean, they'll whatever the outcome, they'll find it illegitimate. They're not going to embrace the finding.
There was a commentator I heard recently quoting a newspaper columnist from maybe the 40s or 50s, and his line was, "We don't see what we believe. No, we don't believe what we see. We see what we believe."
Oh, that's nice.
And I just think that is so true right now.
I'm going to tweet that.
Was it the worst week?
You can take it.
was this the worst week ever for the president? I mean, he gets al-Baghdadi, the father of ISIS, and he feels like he's going to have a crowning moment at Game 5 of the World Series. And when they put him and Melania up at the... It was Game 5, wasn't it?
Yeah,
at the World Series?
Oh, he was there at Game 5.
Yeah, at Game 5. And they put him and Melania up on the Jumbotron, and they get booed. I don't know if I believe the video of him crying as a result of that. Did you see that too?
No.
There was the video of them smiling and then kind of going rut-roll, but then there's imagery later that surfaced of him actually sniffling like he's hurt his feelings.
I don't believe that man has ever shed a tear over anything.
So he famously said, the last time I cried, I was a baby.
You don't like the fact that they booed.
I was only reminding you that on MSNBC, what is it? Joe Scarborough,
former Republican congressman.
They said you shouldn't do that.
No, what Scarborough was complaining about was the lock him up chant.
Okay, well, I'll put those in the same box.
I think that the lock him up chant is clearly a commentary on Trump's supporters chanting "lock her up" about Hillary Clinton. This is like back at you, President Trump. This was not an organic call.
Okay, so the boo is okay, but the lock him up is
no,
not.
No, I think according to Joe Scarborough, I think they're both fine. They're both, this is America. This is, you can boo your president. That's a great thing. So I hope that'll always be true.
That's funny because I do not like the automatic boo. I don't think just because you hold office, you should be booed at a public event. But the lock him up, I think, is good because it's fitting, and it's sort of poetic justice in a way. I mean, his supporters and have gone around the country shouting "lock her up, lock her up." Now he finds himself in a real situation, and they've turned the phrase on him. I told you on the air, I think 20, 30 years from now when they make the documentary, if he's removed from office, which I don't think he will be, you know, that will be a moment in the film when you had the audience shouting "lock him up."
If he is convicted by the Senate, I will do more than buy the Stan's donuts that I put in front of you all. That is so. This whole thing is episode whose ending we know.
There were no Republican crossover votes for the impeachment inquiry rules today, even though we have been assured, you know, with behind the scenes reporting and off the record anonymous sources, that Republicans are deeply troubled and saddened and, you know, concerned. And it's striking when you think back to the impeachment of Bill Clinton, when you had almost 30 Democrats crossover and vote to start that impeachment action. And I think that goes to show that we are even more partisan than it was back then. But also, you know, those Democrats paid no price for that. You know, there was a sense that people needed to vote their conscience, and but that does not exist in today's
Republican. Didn't Democrats suffer in the next election after Clinton's impeachment? No, the Republicans did.
Right.
The Republicans suffered,
right.
Yeah.
But there was, you know, there's been all this talk of Republicans expelling other Republicans for speaking out against the president. That did not happen during the Clinton impeachment. You voted against Clinton, that, you know, you weren't tarred and feathered like somebody like Justin Amash has been.
Certainly smart money would be with you, John, on this, but there might come a point where the dam breaks. And, you know, all these politicians, they're about self-preservation first, second, and third. And so if they start to think that this is really going to play badly for them and that it's going to be better for their party if they expel this foreign body that is Donald Trump, I could see if you could get some sort of critical mass of them just turning on him. They only need 20 of them, and it happened with Nixon, right? There were like four or five Republican senators went. Well, I think they went to the White House and said, "It's time to go."
It was a different era.
Yeah, but it is pretty amazing that there are polls that show a majority of Americans think not just that he should be impeached, but that he should be removed.
Yeah,
I'm surprised we're there now, and that number isn't going to go down as the evidence comes out.
And it is the exact opposite of the polling at the time of Clinton's impeachment. Clinton's impeachment was far less popular at this point than the impeachment of Donald Trump is.
Wouldn't the Republicans be better off without Trump at the head of the ticket next year?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he beat all those guys fair and square.
Well, he had some help.
Did he, though?
Whoa, did I just walk into that one? What did you make of the sort of preoccupation that the press has had this week, too, with the truth of Trump's vision of al-Baghdadi's capture? He described him as whimpering and cowering. He died like a dog. And yet the video was from drones overhead. There were no body cams.
And there was no audio.
So how did he know all of that?
Defense Secretary, right, and Joint Chiefs both said they couldn't confirm that, but they said maybe the president talked to someone on the ground.
Right. And that's possible. Maybe it's not.
Do you think it's possible that the president talked to someone that the Joint Chiefs chairman didn't?
I don't think it's important. I think because all this is, here we go again, Steve. Yeah. All you come away with if you win this argument is that the president made that up.
No, here's
that's the 11,200th lie that
Al
he would
Baghdadi
have told.
Was with a couple of children, too. So,
three.
And, I mean, can you tell if those children are whimpering and crying or if he is?
He made it up.
I think he did. I think he did make it up, and I don't think it's. I would agree with John finally that. This particular Trump lie is not that important.
He did make it up, and it was important because he again shot himself in the foot.
Oh, well, totally.
This was a great moment for him. This is a great moment for the country, and he could have basked in that. Instead, he came in with this fantastical, whimpering, cowering story, and so then people started questioning that. And so he stepped in his own moment.
Yeah. Well, that's true. He did.
Well, he's famous for that. It was reported this week that they wrote a speech for him. I don't know if it would have looked or sounded like Barack Obama's after Osama bin Laden went down, but they had a speech for him that wasn't what he did. He pretty much ignored what they gave him, and he did his, I'm going to make it tougher than it really was
speech. He took a little whack at Obama, too, right? He said, the president should have had him, yeah.
So then Jimmy Kimmel did the juxtaposition of Obama with Trump.
The United States launched a targeted operation against that compound.
They did a lot of shooting, and they did a lot of blasting, even not going through the front door. You know, you think you go through the door. If you're a normal person, you say, knock, knock, may I come in?
After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body.
He died like a dog.
Obama talks for 9 minutes, very briefly and very dignified. And
takes no questions.
No poetry to this. And then Trump.
Well, he shot himself in the foot, as Steve said.
I tell you that I was really bothered by the photoshopped picture of
the dog
getting a Medal of Honor?
Does that one matter?
And this is just my own personal sort of history, but my dad was a Vietnam War vet. The man who was photoshopped out of the picture to put the dog in was honored for his service at Vietnam.
But and has spoken about the photoshopping
and
said it didn't bother him.
Right. It bothered me, though, because there had been very few Vietnam-era soldiers awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, and this was sort of seen as sort of an honor for everybody who served in Vietnam. And it bothered me as a journalist that he was tweeting really fake news. If I tweeted a photoshopped photo of the mayor doing something, I'd be fired.
Right.
You'd be fired.
Is this one of those "how stupid does he think we are" moments?
No, it's a joke, you
was
guys.
It a joke?
The White House didn't do it. Donald Trump didn't do it. Somebody else did it, and he thought,
"Right,
oh,
it
my
was
God,
from the Daily Wire."
It's funny. Okay. It's just like, wow, the great canine or dog, as
and
you call it.
And I think we all knew that the dog is still overseas, right?
Yeah.
The dog is back in action.
Yeah.
I think I heard the dog's being brought to the White House next week.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Well, then maybe both are true. I've heard for sure that the dog has now been redeployed. The dog has no idea that he's this international fixture, but I could see them patting him on the head at the White House. So, Eddie Johnson, was he wrong not to attend the president's speech when he came to Chicago?
I said, where is he? I want to talk to him. In fact, more than anyone else, this person should be here. Because maybe he could learn something. And that's the superintendent of Chicago Police, Eddie Johnson.
I think he was in a no-win position. He goes, he is seen as supporting Donald Trump, who has, you know, caused great fear in Chicago's immigrant communities. I think it hurts his ability to encourage Chicago immigrants to see the police department as a helping force and not an occupying force. But I think it cost him with the rank and file, especially with the FOP, which of course took the no confidence vote of him. I don't think he could have won. However, I will say that I agreed with Eric's column in that it helped distract from Eddie Johnson's nap in the car while driving, and helped sort of push that to the back burner.
Well, any chance that Eddie Johnson was going to get pushed out by Mayor Lightfoot, I think, went away this week or in the last 7 days or so with the FOP coming out with this no confidence vote and then Trump attacking him, which sort of sealed the deal. You can't have the mayor appearing to side with the FOP and with President Trump blasting Eddie Johnson. He still has problems, obviously, that he's got to deal with. And we saw the report just the other day about murder investigations in Chicago and how those need to be totally revamped and revised and how they go about that. That's also on Eddie Johnson's plate. But I think he was right not to go. I think he was right what he said. I think it was inevitable that Trump attacked him. Trump might have attacked him if he were there. He could have, of course, just not gone to the speech, not said anything about it, but that's not how we do things anymore.
Well, remember after Jussie Smollett, Eddie stood up for Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it was, because if he's just sitting there taking that rhetoric from Trump, which was kind of true, the stuff he was saying about the crime in Chicago.
What?
Kind
of true.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Channel 9 did a fact check on the president's speech, and no, Afghanistan is more dangerous than it is in Chicago, but crime is not going down as fast in Chicago as it is in the rest of the country.
He said crime is going up in Chicago. I mean, he was lying. I mean, you did it. It was on your show. You were talking a lot about this.
His pants on fire in their PolitiFact fact check.
So not every syllable was a lie. So you're saying he was pretty truthful.
I'm saying that I don't know why Eddie would sit there and take it, right? True or not, I completely understand why there's no value to him or the city, because he's our guy to sit there and take that load of crap, even if some of it might have been true.
Well, I mean, the general point that Chicago is a crime and violence problem, sure.
Okay, here I go, Steve. The murder rate in St. Louis is 3 times higher,
yes,
than in Chicago. In the list of cities with 100,000 people or more, we are 16th. And places like
Milwaukee, right?
Milwaukee, yes. And Dayton are more. I can just see families moving to Des Moines, Dayton, or Milwaukee thinking, whew, got out of that one. And they're going to a town with a higher murder or violent crime rate. That's the truth. It's the FBI numbers from last year. So that's what I resent, is this characterization of us. We can't champion, 20.2 murders per 100,000 people? That's not good either, but it's perspective really matters here, and the president has no interest in that. I want to move on to, this is silly, but I just know that it affects people in a very personal way. Today is Halloween. Out our windows, it's been snowing, at least it was when we started this podcast. It's a miserable October 31. A dozen or so neighborhoods and suburbs have moved Halloween to Saturday because of the weather. Bertrand, your thoughts, go.
I don't give a care.
Zorn. And by the way, thank you for that, Steve. That really helps.
I think. Well, I do mean that. I mean, if they want to do it, why do we, who don't live in these towns, why do we get so upset that some suburb is doing something that they think is right for them? Why is it a personal offense to me? That's what I mean by I don't give a care.
Well, I understand that. That's a little more nuanced. Thank you for that.
I don't think you should move Halloween during the week of Halloween, because it throws off everyone's schedules and everything else. I would like to see it on the Sunday before October 31st, trick-or-treating from 3 to 7 or something like
Unless
that.
Unless it's snowing or raining that day.
Well, even if it's snowing or raining that day, let's just move it a little bit earlier in the year, tiny bit earlier in the year. Or maybe it's on Sunday. Maybe the 31st is a Sunday.
Well, we've already changed when we changed the clocks for Halloween.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Heather, you have kids, right?
I do.
How old are they again?
10 and 7.
Oh, this is right in their wheelhouse.
It is,
what are you guys going to do? What do you think?
Well, I have outsourced Halloween to my husband because, as we speak, city council is having wall-to-wall budget hearings. So I am playing hooky to be here, actually, because I enjoy you guys so
much.
We
so appreciate you being here.
So he will be in charge of taking them trick-or-treating. And we did like a trunk-or-treat at their school on Sunday, and the weather was beautiful and they had a great time. So if it were up to me, I would say, yeah, that was Halloween. Sorry, guys. It's, snowing and gross outside. But, if they want to go and get a cold, God bless them.
I mean, I think it's not so much the discomfort of the kids or the parents. It's the safety issue, right? I mean, it's more difficult to see. It's going to be slippery,
I saw the number of pedestrian kids hit on Halloween. It's, it's constant throughout the year, and it just skyrockets today.
I hate driving home on Halloween when the kids are running around.
But I think that's true regardless of the weather. Maybe snow and rain makes it a little more dangerous, but I think the reason people get animated about this, even if they don't live in the neighborhood, Steve, is because it's just another sign.
It's tradition.
That parents will do anything to shield their kids from an inconvenience in life. Oh my God, it's raining on my kid for Halloween. Well, I'm going to fix that too. They're just snow plowing ahead any obstacle in their children's way. And that pisses people off.
Right. But if it wasn't Halloween, they would find something else during the afternoon to get pissed off about.
I'm telling you, I think that people just roll their eyes. They go, what are some of your memories of Halloween as a kid? Well, I remember the year it snowed. Whoa, heaven forbid that be part of your memory bank. So
well, wasn't
parents jump in
every Chicago
the way.
Kid's Halloween costume Hulk in a winter coat, witch
right.
in a winter coat?
Exactly, yes.
Bunny rabbit in a winter coat.
I miss when you can go buy a bar of soap at the White Hen and soap people's windows. That's what I miss.
White Hen, there's a flashback.
Good times. Let's talk quickly about Representative Luis Arroyo. I'm reading from the, this is CBS. Another powerful Springfield Democrat has been targeted by the feds. This time, agents arrested Representative Luis Arroyo, the Democrat from Chicago, on accusations of bribing a state senator. Unfortunately, the senator was wearing a wire, because I think they're all wearing wires now. They should just say, hey, if you took me to coffee, I would say, are you wearing a wire? I don't know if it's against the law to lie about that.
Are we being recorded
now? Yes, exactly.
I think we are being recorded now.
Arroyo, 65, is charged with one count of federal program bribery. According to the complaint, Arroyo offered to pay $2,500 per month to an Illinois state senator in return for the senator's support for sweepstakes-related legislation. It would benefit one of Arroyo's lobbying clients. So in other words, the lobbyist goes to Arroyo and says, we so want this legislation. We need you to get it to happen. And then he takes money and gives it to another lawmaker for the vote. I wonder where the money came from. Did it come from the lobbyist or the sweepstakes people, or is it out of his own pocket? Where does that $2,500 a month come from?
That's the least of my questions, actually, here. But I'm sure it comes through the organization that wants the vote. But they may just be paying the lobbyist to pass the money along, allegedly.
He says, slides the money to him, and he says, this is, it was almost like Joe Biden whispering into Barack Obama's ear, this is big, this is really big, when he signed the Affordable Health Care Act. He says, I'm going to give you this. This is the jackpot. $2,500 is not a jackpot.
Well, but it was $2,500 a month in perpetuity.
I don't know. I would think that if I'm the conduit for that, $2,500 is not enough money to go down.
Okay.
I mean, for God's sakes, people. Oh, don't what is these your, people know?
What is your price, John Williams?
It's a lot more. It's so much money that if I get caught, when I get out of jail, Brenda and I live on an island. And that ain't $2,500.
So what struck me about this was the timing. This is allegedly took place in August.
Yeah.
In August, we knew the feds were everywhere. Raids were happening. We knew that there had been people wearing wires for years. We knew the feds were breathing down everybody's necks. And yet, he's all, don't worry, it's just you and me talking. And
yeah, right. And I'm going to slide you this envelope with the money in it. I swear to God, if I witnessed something like that, if I was sitting at that table, say, it would be more remarkable to me than if I were to see Loch Ness Monster or something, because I can't believe it that these people still do this, knowing they'll go to jail or they'll at least get kicked out.
It was like Blagojevich and all his shenanigans, right? While George Wright, his predecessor, was in prison. These guys, none of them think they're going to get caught. I think they're all guys.
They all get caught. They all get caught. I mean, what are we talking about? Another one got caught.
Well, here's one problem, you know, beyond just our outrage here, is this idea that someone can be a lobbyist. Arroyo was lobbying for a group in the city. He was a city lobbyist. But that seems to me to be in sort of almost inherent conflict with your role as a state legislator. That's just, they shouldn't be allowed to have that kind of outside job. And they need to crack down on this outside employment much more than they are right now.
Walk me through that, Eric. So he's a state lawmaker. He is also a lobbyist for...
He lobbies the Chicago City Council on behalf of this client.
Oh, you can't do that.
You can. It's 100% legal.
When I get to be king, that's inherently, as you said.
I don't even think it will require your coronation to have that happen. I think that ultimately, the General Assembly, maybe Pritzker will be able to take the lead on this. They're going to need to pass some laws about exactly this. It's outside employment. It creates these conflicts, and that's the source of a lot of this corruption.
So,
well, it won't be while Mike Madigan is still House Speaker.
Why do you say that?
Because he is an outside property tax attorney, so there's no way he's opening up that kettle of fish. Is that the right metaphor? I don't think it is.
It works for me.
I think you open a can of worms into a kettle of fish.
Well, Jim Durkin, the Republican from Western Springs, I chuckled at this too. He said, so today begins the process of cleaning up this chamber. I thought, yeah, right. Are you kidding me?
Hope springs eternal.
I know. The actions today go to the heart of public trust in state government. It'll be a long time before people like me have any hope, you know, for faith in the city council or the people in Springfield. I don't know. And I'm not a jaded person by nature. You know these people better than I do. Am I wrong about my gut feeling on this?
I think 99.9% of them are there to help the public.
Oh, well, then shut me up. But
things like this make that sort of cynicism seem reasonable.
I would agree with that, although I think your percentage is a little high.
Hey, give me a number. Seriously, both of you, give me a number in general. Mush them all together.
How many of them are
House, Senate, and City Council? How many of them
pure are pure as Caesar's wife?
No, but how many of them are stinky?
Stinky?
I would say 25%. Is that high? You, Heather doesn't like that. She's at 1%.
I mean, there's a but of course there's somebody like Alderman Ed Burke who's facing 14 counts of corruption indictment, who says he's innocent, but who's still there on the city council. So,
yeah, but he's stinky, right?
You know,
is Danny Solis stinky?
I mean, he certainly was. You know, I think, yeah.
I mean, I could start to do this. Do we have to say allegedly stinky? I just said stinky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so we now have a sample of 2 out of 50, right? Which is, that would give us to...
Well, that'd be, right, 2 out of 50 would be 4%, right?
Yeah.
That'd be 4 out of 100, yeah. 4%, so would you give me 96?
Sure.
Yeah, but that's just off the top of my head. Yeah. I'll bet I could do better than that. Okay, well, I'm just, dismayed, but I'm also just stunned by the stupidity of people that get caught. If you get caught in this day and age, that is so on you, man. One way to get around it is to just don't be corrupt. Don't take or make the bribes. Now, anything else you smart people want to pass along on this edition of The Mincing Rascals?
I think we've covered the entire spectrum of news.
Let's go back to Halloween. Bertrand loves that topic. Thank you, Steve Bertrand, for coming in. Eric Zorn. By the way, Heather Sharon, you haven't told us much about your what you do and the subscription service that you have.
So we're The Daily Line. We're at thedailyline.net, and we send out 3 newsletters every morning. One is a free newsletter, so it will cost you $0 to get a sample of what we do every day. And we also have a Chicago newsletter, and we have a Springfield newsletter. And it's designed to be your one-stop shop for everything you need to know about what's happening at City Hall, in the county building, and in the General Assembly.
And how does one subscribe to or get any of this?
Go to thedailyline.net.
And
it's all set up
for that. You're the managing editor?
I am. They have made that decision.
You make it sound like buyer beware.
It's on them. It's on them.
Thanks for coming in, Heather. You too, Eric. That's The Mincing Rascals. We're produced by LF Garris. I'm John Williams. Drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.